Back in the kitchen, I intervened before Emin could blurt out anything he might have to apologize for. It must be expensive for people like Emin and Ignatha Forl to keep tabs on it, I pointed out.
Of course, Emin said. But even if you ignore that, there's a huge amount of mathic effort going into it. Thousands of avowed working night and day. Seculars don't like wasted effort. That goes double for seculars who know a thing or two about management.
Management was a fluckish word. Faces went blank around the kitchen. I stepped in to translate. Just because the Pandrondrums know how to run cheeseburg stands, they think they know how to run a convox. Lots of people putting in time with no results makes them nervous.
Oh, I see,
Triss said uncertainly.
How funny,
Carvel said, and went back to work. Emin rolled his eyes.
I admit I am no Theor, Ignatha Forl was saying on the speaker. But the more I hear of this, the less I understand your position, Frau Lodegear. 3 is a prime number. It is prime today, was prime yesterday. 1 billion years ago, before there were brains to think about it, it was prime. And if all the brains were destroyed tomorrow, it would still be prime. Clearly, its primeness has nothing to do with our brains.
It has everything to do with our brains, Lodegear insisted, because we supply the definition of what it is to be a prime number.
No Theor who attends to these matters can long escape the conclusion that the Canoans exist independently of what may or may not be going on in people's brains at any given moment,
Paphlagon said.
It is a simple application of the Steelyard. What is the simplest way of explaining the fact that Theors, working independently in different eras, different sub-disciplines, different cosmi even, time and time again prove the same results? Results that do not contradict each other, even though reached by different proof chains. Results, some of which can be turned into theories that perfectly describe the behavior of the physical universe. The simplest answer is that the Canoans really exist and are not of this causal domain.
Arcibald's bell jingled. I decided to go in with him. We took down a huge rendering of the icosahedron that had been pinned to a tapestry behind Paphlagon. Carvel and Triss came out and helped take the tapestry down, exposing a wall of dark gray slate and a basket of chalk. The dialogue had turned to an exposition of complex versus simple protism, and so Arcibald was called upon to draw on that slate the same sorts of diagrams that Frau Kriskin had drawn in the dust of the road up Bly's Butte when he had explained this topic to me and Leo some weeks earlier. The freight train, the firing squad, the wick, and so on. I drifted back and forth between there and the kitchen as the exposition went on. Ignatha Forl had long been familiar with this material, but it was new to several of the others. Javarn, in particular, asked several questions. Emin, for once, understood less of what was going on than his Doyne, and so as he and I worked on garnishes for the desserts, I watched his face and jumped in with little explanations when his eyes went out of focus. I returned to the Messalin to clear plates, just as Paphlagon was explaining the wick.
A fully generalized, directed acyclic graph, with no distinction made anymore between, on the one hand, so-called theoric worlds, and on the other, inhabited ones such as Arb, Quator, and the rest. For the first time, we have arrows leading away from the Arbran causal domain toward other inhabited worlds.
Do you mean to suggest,
Lodegear asked, as though not quite believing his ears,
that Arb might be the Hylaean theoric world of some other world that has people living on it?
Of any number of such worlds,
Paphlagon said,
which might themselves be the HTWs of still other worlds.
But how could we possibly verify such a hypothesis?
Lodegear demanded.
We could not, Jad admitted,
in his first utterance of the whole evening,
unless those worlds came to us.
Lodegear broke into rich laughter.
Frau Chad, I commend you. What would this Messal be without your punchlines? I don't agree with a word of what you're saying, but it does make for an entertaining, because completely unpredictable, mealtime.
I heard the first part of this in person, the back half over the speaker in the kitchen, to which I had repaired with an armload of plates. Emin was standing over the counter where we had spread out the phototypes, thumbing something into his G-jaw. He ignored me, but he did glance up and fix his gaze on nothing in particular as Ignatha Forel began to speak.
The material is interesting, the explanation well carried off, but I am at a loss now. Yesterday evening we were told one story about how plurality of worlds might be understood, and it had to do with hem space and world tracks.
Which I spent all day explaining to rooms full of bureaucrats,
Emin complained, with a theatrical yawn.
And now this.
Now, Ignatha Forel was saying, we are hearing an altogether different account of it, which seems to have nothing to do with the first. I cannot help but wonder whether tomorrow's messel will bring another story, and the day after that yet another.
This touched off a round of not very interesting conversation in the messel, and the servitors pounced and cleared. Archibald trudged to the kitchen and busied himself at the keg.
I'd best fortify myself,
he explained to no one in particular,
as I am condemned to spend the remainder of the evening drawing light bubbles.
What's a light bubble? Emin asked me quietly. A diagram that shows how information, cause and effect, moves across space and time.
Time which doesn't exist,
Emin said, repeating what had become a stock joke. Yeah, but it's okay. Space doesn't exist either, I said. Emin threw me a sharp look and decided I must be pulling his leg.